Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western and Northwestern Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the sports animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Try to hit that high school football 4A preview that was in the Oklahoman yesterday toward the end of the show. Preseason AP poll, we skipped right over it. It was released on, Monday. Skipped over it. A little bit of a difference from the coaches' poll here and there. A little bit, maybe not as dominant a number one as what the coaches had. We'll talk about that. OU recruiting, it's kind of interesting. The 2022 class falling apart at a couple of positions, but the 2023 class looks to be one of the better ones in the country. Here's the problem. At this time a year ago, the 2022 class looked to be the same. What's happening? Is there something you can fix? Because you don't just lose three of the top 100 players at one position for no reason. And it's a position you'd think would be easy to recruit to. So we'll see. It's going to be doom and gloom on one class, and then the next one, it'll be sunshines and rainbows. But can you hold on to them? That's the problem with this one and the 2023 class that are just now going to be juniors. We'll talk about that. John Rahm, did you see what he said yesterday by any chance?
No.
He's back for the playoffs. He had some interesting comments about the Olympics and the positive test that kicked him out of there. Did you see the story about the U.S. Open, the golf, the USGA guys' ticket scheme?
Barely. I saw it pop up on my phone, and I was scared that I got scammed out of my
crazy
tickets for next year.
Crazy story. Well, that's the PGA.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, U.S. Open. This is a pretty crazy story about this guy named Robert Fryer. And then Tim Tebow released. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. The fallout from it is just hilarious. I saw a comment on ESPN that is baffling. I mean, just baffling that A, someone is allowed to say that and be that dumb and B, that it even goes that way. So we'll get there. All right, you want to talk about golf or you want to talk about Tebow?
It's your show.
No, this is your...
Either way, I don't care.
I'm not making you do what's on Jared's mind, so you can you can choose either topic.
Let's talk about Tim Tebow. That seems to be the hot topic.
Okay, so
getting
we talked a little bit about it yesterday. As soon as it came out, he got cut.
Expected.
And yeah, of course. I mean,
everybody expected it.
With the video that he put out there a couple of times trying to block somebody.
Right.
And well, maybe not trying, whatever that was. You could see it coming. I mean, the guy's 34 years old. He's never played the position. But then I'm like, so yesterday you look up on ESPN on their website, Stephen A. Smith says that only white guys get these opportunities. Only white guys get opportunities in the NFL. Meanwhile, the league as a whole is 70% black. So how in the world can you be that disingenuous with a take like that?
It's just a bad take. It is.
I mean, why in the world does Tim... I mean, everyone should know Tim Tebow grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. He was a legend as a Florida Gator. And now his college coach is in his first preseason as an NFL coach. And guess what? It worked for Jacksonville because you know who has the number one selling jersey in the NFL?
Right.
Tim Tebow. And he didn't even make the first cut.
Right.
So it has to do with popularity, and it has to do with the name Tim Tebow. It doesn't have a damn thing to do with the color of his skin. He is a legend in Jacksonville, Florida, for good reason. what he did in high school and what he did for the Gators and what he did for Urban Meyer, quite frankly, to, you know, boost his career even higher.
Oh, yeah.
And so it only makes financial sense if you're going to bring some guy off the street to give him a chance. He didn't take anybody's spot. I'm so tired of hearing that. He didn't take anybody's spot. The only thing he might have done is get some guy that's working at Sight and Sound not 2 weeks to go try out. That guy wasn't making it either. So it's
newsflash, no 34-year-old was going to make the team.
Well, they're, I mean,
just like in that situation,
nobody that far down is making the team when you just come off the street. But that's what with the enhanced numbers because of COVID, more guys get a chance, and Tim Tebow just happened to be one of them. But the difference is that guy working at Sight and Sound doesn't have the number one selling jersey in the league because he's not the legend that is Tim Tebow, and it doesn't have anything to do with black or white. It's just because it was Tim Tebow in Jacksonville. And how in the world Stephen A. Smith can think they can get away with that take, it's ridiculous.
Oh, he can.
He's on the worldwide leader.
Yeah, he's untouchable.
And so it's fine.
He's untouchable, yeah. So he can have any horrible take he wants.
It's just so it's so ridiculous. And when you act like, I mean, do you happen to know, I looked this up. I mean, if you want to talk about is there some sort of discrimination against a certain color, you know the last time a white guy started at cornerback in the NFL?
You have to go way back. That's a good one. I don't know.
Jason Sehorn, 2003.
Yeah, oh yeah, I remember him.
So I wonder if Stephen A. is going to have a big giant investigation about why that's happening. Of course not, because it doesn't have anything to do with white or black. It just so happens that a white guy hasn't been good enough to be a corner in the NFL since Jason Sehorn. It's not like anybody's blackballing the white guy out of playing corner. It's not happening. It's just, it's not the way it's going. But to act like Tim Tebow, I mean, it's like no one realizes how famous Tim Tebow really is, especially in that part of the world. And the jersey sales prove it.
Oh, yeah. If Jacksonville was smart, they'd find a way to keep him on the staff somehow or...
Of course.
Something.
Somehow.
I'm surprised they didn't find a way for him to be on special teams, just running down the
side. Well, the problem is,
a kick every time.
In order to
but
be
the
on,
problem is, he has to block.
You got
to
hit somebody if you're going to be on special teams.
He can't seem to block.
And it didn't look like he was overly enthused about doing that.
No.
But, I mean, no. It's just.
Well, that was his quarterback get him, you know. He doesn't want to get hit.
Right.
He doesn't want to issue the hits or make a block. Quarterbacks don't want to do that. Baker Mayfield just running down the sideline with your running back.
Yeah, and that's not even.
But he's
really
not even
trying
doing.
To hit
he's not even doing that now.
No,
you know, he did that in college. But yeah, no, this was never going to work. Regardless who the guy was, it just wasn't going to work.
You know what does seem interesting to me though?
What's that?
There has been more vitriol and negative comments in the last day and a half about Tim Tebow, who, as the comments are being made, they're saying exactly the same thing you and I are saying. And oh yeah, he never had he didn't deserve a spot. He was never going to make the team. Da 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 da. In the same breath of saying that and just ripping Tim Tebow to shreds, he's taken more abuse from the national media in the last 36 hours. Than a guy that's under investigation for 24 sexual assaults has all summer long. In which a grand jury has been convened and maybe even an FBI investigation into Deshaun Watson, and nary a peep toward him.
And he is still allowed to practice, right?
Yeah, I hadn't been
he
there,
He hasn't
though.
Been there,
no.
But he's still allowed.
Now, if I... with Stephen A. Smith, you know what I would point out?
What's that? If Watson was a...
No, what's the difference between those two? Tebow and Watson.
It's true. He's taking away a chance from another
well,
quarterback.
Or I'd say, well, golly, are they not? Are they just picking
on
the
white... He was not under investigation.
Well, or are they just picking on the white guy? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, we live in a world of hypocrisy.
No doubt. And here's here's going to be the truth of it. You know what the real truth of it is? You know what scares people about Tim Tebow and causes these reactions to start? You know what scares him? Scares people about him?
What's that?
His faith.
Oh, absolutely.
And his willingness to profess his faith in a world and in a game to where it's not, people aren't comfortable with that. And so therefore they can't wait for him to fall. And all Tim Tebow has done has been a good dude. And did everybody in college get tired of the fluff pieces? Of course they did. But that wasn't Tim Tebow's fault. He was just being one of the most accomplished college football players of all time and never getting in trouble.
Yeah.
And doing things the right way. But when that happens, you can't wait to tear a guy like that down. And unfortunately, for the blue check media on Twitter, the only thing they've been able to tear him down about has been not making the Jacksonville Jaguars first cut at 34 years old. They haven't been able to tear him down because he's actually messed up off the field, because he hasn't.
No, which is saying something from considering what college team he played on.
Yeah, and think about this. More people are mad about Tim Tebow getting a chance to play at the Jaguars than Aaron Hernandez killing people.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's really true.
Yeah.
You would
There's
think.
There's been more ink wasted on Tim Tebow.
Oh, my gosh. And more harsh words said about Tim Tebow than a guy that's that got convicted of murder on the same team.
Right. And that's just one guy. There was that team.
Yeah, that's just the worst
one. That team was, ugh.
So, probably the last time we'll have to talk about Tim Tebow as an athlete. I'm sure his NFL dream is done now. Good news, if you like Tim Tebow, OU fans, especially, or Texas fans, probably going to get a pretty decent dose of Tim Tebow coming up, because I would imagine his seat is being warmed right as we speak on the set of SEC Live or whatever kind of show.
Oh, sure.
There is for him
to be.
Well,
that's where he was, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And so now he'll be back there full time, and we'll get to enjoy Tim Tebow. But I thought that was very interesting.
I was thinking about his next move. Would he be a good coach?
Well, I don't know. It's something that has.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, what do you?
It's something that hasn't ever really been talked about with him, which is kind of surprising.
How about a good college coach? Do the Steve Spurrier thing. You know, a legend at his school, and then work his way up, and, you know, you could see him being the head coach of the Florida Gators. I think he'd be a heck of a recruiter.
See, that's what
but
I was
going to coach? I don't know.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Want to.
He's got a bunch. He's really, really charismatic.
Yeah.
And you'd think he'd be able to recruit some kids, and it being Tim Tebow, that would seem to help.
Yeah.
But he's never really – that's never really
he
been
was
a path
never,
discussed.
He was never really – he was just a guy –
because he could do TV.
Yeah, he was the guy that in college – could take snaps and will a team to a win. He wasn't really the best, like fundamentally best quarterback of his time. So I don't know if he could be a good quarterback coach, but, you know, I just wonder, could he – that's what I was thinking on the drive in. Like, what could he do? Would he be a coach? Does he want to be a coach?
I think you
– I mean, he's a good TV personality. He's already proven
that's it.
That.
I mean when you can be able to be on the TV side of it, why would you want to, unless it's just in your blood and you want to do it, which it doesn't seem like it ever has been for him, why would you go through the rigor?
Yeah, it seems a little late in the game to.
Well, and plus you have to work so much harder.
Yeah.
Than he does just, you know, I'm not saying you don't have to prepare and that kind of thing, but getting up and talking on the SEC network or a spot on game day every now and then is a heck of a lot easier than the grind of being a college football coach.
Yeah.
And that assistant head, either way. And so I think we're going to see him on TV until he doesn't want to be on TV anymore, to me. Because like you said, he's pretty good at it. You know, and he has, as long as he doesn't just sound completely idiotic, he has the skins on the wall as a player to where it lends him credibility to what he says. You know, until it doesn't, until what he says doesn't. And, you know, a lot of times he's not necessarily right on the money, but he knows what he's talking about. So I think that's where you're going to see him, and kudos to him. Kudos to him for trying. And, you know, one, I just can't wonder, I have to wonder myself as far as the way his NFL career would be, went. What would have happened if he would have tried this move originally and given himself a chance to not be a quarterback and be a player, you know, as an H-back or a tight end way back when he had the athletic ability to do it?
And that was what everyone was saying that he should have done in the first place. I mean, I'm way back when he obviously coming out of Florida going to the draft, people say you got to change positions. Because you're not – you're what I said about his quarterback style, it was not made to be an NFL quarterback. Never really was. Showed flashes of good stuff. Denver comes to mind with the one throw
overtime.
Yeah,
but even
–
you know, that's just crazy that the way that whole phenomenon happened where he – somehow he would look like me and you for three quarters, and then in the fourth quarter he would make two throws, and boom, they'd win. It happened for like the last half of the year and in a playoff game.
Let me tell you something. In high school, I had a lot of at-bats, not a lot of home runs, but those home runs felt good.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, you sit there watching going, this guy is nowhere near an NFL-level quarterback. And somehow, some way, he made a play to win the game, and you're like, this can't last. And it didn't. It was never going to. It was phenomenal in a weird way, not like – greatness phenomenal. It was just, how is this happening? It was nuts there for a while, and then he did what he did. So I don't know, it just we're probably not going to get to talk about him much more as an athlete after this, but you know, the guy was, I mean, his college career is almost unparalleled with the success that he had and the accomplishments. When you start adding them up, it's hard to find a more accomplished college football player than he was.
It's true.
And there's just some times where your game suits a certain level, and that's the way he was. He was a phenomenal college quarterback because he didn't have to make certain throws that you have to make in the NFL, which didn't allow him to be even an average NFL quarterback because he just didn't have the game. But it was perfectly suited for college, and instead of kind of celebrating that, we had to listen to Stephen A. Smith in a league of 70% African Americans act like white guys get all the chances. I mean, it's such a horrific take that it's hard to even explain. All right, the U.S. Open ticket scheme. So I saw this pop up yesterday. So from 2013 through the 2019 U.S. Open in golf, that was Marion through, I think, Pebble Beach in 2019. A guy named Robert Fryer was the assistant director to the USGA ticket office.
Okay.
And somehow, some way, throughout that seven-year period, he stole over 23,000 tickets to those seven golf tournaments.
My goodness. How did he get away with that? Well, he did.
And then sold them to third-party brokers for over $1 million, yeah. and the face value was $3 million-ish. And you're, how in the world? Of course, when he's in the position that he's in, I suppose it's easier to, you know, fluff things around or what have you, but 23,000 tickets?
Mm.
And you know, I guess the thing is, once they started taking them at the gate, it's not like you looked at the official ticket or, you know, attendance numbers and went, whoa, we were 5,000 less this year than we thought, because they actually got used.
Right.
It just didn't get you. But when you're going back through there, it seems really odd. And it's just kind of starting to come out. So I'm sure by the time a few weeks or whatever rolls around, we'll start kind of getting an idea of how this scheme was hatched and how he executed it for as long as he did. But when you see 23,000 tickets, it's like, how in the world could he get away with
that?
Why
do people do that and think they get away with it? Right? Why do criminals do anything? Criminals aren't smart, but I never understood that.
Some of them
are.
Even
the biggest heists in the world are eventually caught. I just watched Goodfellas the other night, and I think they all get caught. You know, I don't get it. So he thought he was going to get away with it.
They did for a long time.
A lot, yeah. A lot. Well, sure.
Probably enjoyed that $1 million he made.
Golly. Well, he's now.
He's now. He's now has one count of conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud, 4 counts of mail fraud, and 10 counts of wire fraud, which carry sentences of up to 300 years in prison.
That's not the big issue. What about restitution? I mean, there's fines involved.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Like $375,000.
Will he be ordered to repay the money lost? You see what I'm saying? Well, he's not going to spend the rest of his life in prison for that stuff, for the nonviolent crimes. But he will get pegged. I mean, he's broke now.
Yeah, I can't wait for that, for the scheme and how he did it to come out. I mean, I know what he did, but how did he get away with stealing that many tickets every year to be able to sell to the third parties?
Man, that something tells me he didn't work alone.
Yeah, maybe that's why he got away with it that long, because he was working alone and he didn't have anybody. No one's squealing, or nobody's messing up his scheme.
Yeah. That's a good point too.
Yeah, you know,
it just feels like organized crime to me, man. It feels like he's guy. A made man.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty wild.
He's connected.
Then there's John Rahm. He's starting first start in a while, probably since the Open Championship, I think. And he talked about his having to pull out of the Olympics due to positive COVID test. And he said, "I guarantee you I did not have that virus." And he went on to explain that he took 5 tests. One on Tuesday, one on Wednesday prior to the tournament. Negative, negative. Then he took one on Friday, positive. Turned around and took a saliva test and a PCR test on Saturday, or the next day. I guess Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I think it was, it may have been. Anyhow, the day after he tested positive, he takes the saliva test, he takes the PCR test. Negative, negative. And so then they test him for antibodies. Bam, positive for antibodies. Yet he still gets removed from the field. The reason
I've quickest recovery of COVID I've ever heard of.
Yeah, he's like, "There's a guarantee I didn't have it." And he goes, "The first time, which was the infamous
right.
walking off at the memorial after the round antibodies. 3, he said, I tested positive." He goes, "I probably had it because I didn't have many symptoms, but I felt a little bit tired."
Yeah.
And then when he got vaccinated, they took the antibodies test and he had them. So he's like, "I know I had them. He said this, I didn't even sniffle. There's no chance I had it. It's a negative. It was a false positive test." Which brings us to what's about to happen with football. All the conferences have basically, after yesterday, Big 12 came out yesterday and said, if teams can't reach the threshold of players, you know, last year it was delay the games, move the games, or just not play the games. This year, the team that's having the problems will have to forfeit the games.
Okay. Threshold of play. Excuse me. So what is that, 22 players? What is that?
No. It's way more than that.
Well, what is that?
Well, and it's having to have a certain number of a position group, and I can't remember what that threat. We'll have to look
have
at,
depth, I
we'll
guess.
Have to look it back up to see what all those numbers were. But if you had to have X amount of this, X amount of that, and I think what was the number? 55 scholarship players or something like that out of the 85. There was a number last year that you had to have that they're continuing on with. But it's this is just that story that's never ever going to go away.
No, it's not.
It's never going to go away. And it's never going to be, well, never may not be the right word to say here, but once again I ask you, at what point is this going to be treated for these people, for these athletes at this age, that all the numbers show are affected very little? At what point are these guys or gals or, you know, other sports going to have the choice to play with this? Just like they would have the choice to play with the flu, just like they would have the choice to play with the cold and all those other things. And then sprained ankles, broken fingers, whatever it is. How long until that's going
to
happen?
Well, I used to say it was going to be based on it just
takes. We all thought vaccines.
Well,
once there's a vaccine, let's go now.
Well,
that ain't happening.
I thought it would be more or less that and more study, and it'll take time and all that stuff. But it's clearly it's politically driven, and it's based on leadership. It's who's in the White House, who has control of Congress, and basically who's leading the CDC, because it's right now it's a perfect storm of that going against what everything we're saying about how long. Because now, I mean, now it's just about control, and you know, I hate to kind of lean that way and get conspiracy theory-ish, but it feels that way. Because I was on the side of, well, once we get a vaccine out there, we're going to have more choice and more freedoms and stuff. But that's clearly not the case, because first it started like that, and I was like, wait, we can't give them too much freedom, so let's ramp up the...
Better pull her back.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, yeah. It's getting back to normal.
Yeah, it's getting ridiculous. But you're right, that these guys, it's not... this is all against Dennis Dodd's wishes, but it's not putting them in hospitals. It's not...
Not these guys, it's
impairing
not.
...impairing their ability.
No.
Nah, it's going to take a lot more time, and might be another 3.5 years.
Maybe so. All right, we didn't talk yesterday about... Which, to me... No offense to the coaches, and no offense to Phil Still, even though it's always great when you start seeing that. But to me, the official kind of, okay, we're here, college football's about to start, is the release of the AP Top 25 preseason poll. And that happened on Monday. And to nobody's surprise, once again, Alabama was tabbed as the number one team in the country.
No shocker.
No shocker whatsoever.
Nah.
It's the fourth time in the last 6 years that the Crimson Tide will start as the number one team in that AP poll. And when you look at the difference between kind of the AP and the coaches, you know, we talked about this when the coaches poll was released. Alabama was an almost unanimous pick as number one by the coaches with 63 out of the 65 first place votes. A little bit less unanimous in the writers poll out of what, 63 first place votes? It's 53. Yeah, 63. Yeah. Out of 63, they got 47. Which, I mean, that's still more than a stranglehold on the number one position in the preseason poll, but it's also 16 other votes that weren't for Bama as opposed to two in the other. So, you know, maybe not quite as consensus, but still far and away the number one team in the country. Now, there was a difference right at the top, not in the top five, as the AP and the coaches actually had the top six exactly the same teams. And for the most part, the same order. But the AP flipped OU and Clemson, with the Sooners at number two, Clemson at number three, both of which received six first-place votes in the poll. Then, of course, Ohio State and Georgia. Ohio State got one, Georgia got three, A&M at six. Were you surprised that Oklahoma was ahead of Clemson at number two in the writers' poll?
I don't think so. There were people that were surprised that they were number three in the coaches, but like you said, you know, sometimes the coaches, they just, I don't think they do as much intense studying on this, you know, outside of their own conference. Like, well, we all know Alabama's good, so they're number one, and there's Clemson. They're always up there with Dabo. Okay, number two. Coaches have better things to worry about, in my opinion. That's their team and coaching and getting ready for the season. So I don't, you know, I don't even know how much input they put into it, actually. Do they give it to an intern and go, can you do this for me? Who knows? But the AP, this is their job. The writers, the media, they study this, and they, you know, they're paid to do this. So I think it makes a lot more sense based on returning talent. Obviously, Alabama's always going to have the talent. We've talked about that ad nauseum. But with Oklahoma returning probably the leading Heisman candidate in Spencer Rattler, the defense seems like they've made a turn, and a lot of people, even Paul Feinbaum yesterday, was saying defense for OU is going to be pretty good. I think a lot of media has felt that way too. So, and the common thing was that immediately after the Cotton Bowl, the common saying was next year might be the best team Lincoln Riley has ever had in his short tenure here at OU. So, no, it doesn't shock me at all that they're at number two.
Yeah, me neither, because everyone was always – Alabama has to be number one, not because they won it last year, just because of what they have coming back. I mean, they lost tons, but they always reload. And, You know, if this was, you know, 2012 or 2010 or something like that, after Saban got Bama rolling the way that he did after a season, you know, there was times back then where, okay, yeah, Bama lost a quarterback, Bama lost this, Bama lost that. Let's put him at like 5 or 6. He's proven that to be a dumb take.
I mean, yeah.
And so you start him at 1 as the defending national champion. Nobody is arguing that. Nobody would argue that. And we'll see what happens. I think with OU, I do think the Riders are more susceptible to the, well, they've got their quarterback back, the other two behind them don't. Which is why, to me, Oklahoma's number 2 with Rattler. And the defense does play a part in that as well. I thought it was interesting that both the coaches and the AP had the exact same teams, even in to the top 10. Now, it wasn't the same order, but it was the same teams with A&M, Iowa State, Cincinnati, Notre Dame, and North Carolina. Both polls had the same teams in the top 10. That seems a little bit odd to me that one of the two didn't just, you know, have somebody snuck up,
yeah,
at 10. That seemed a little odd to me. Cincinnati at number 8 in the AP poll.
Just stretch for me.
They are the highest group of 5 team in a preseason poll in the college football playoff era.
All right.
And a big part of that is they were good. They took Georgia right down to the wire. They got the quarterback back. You know, there's a lot to do and to vote for there with the Bearcats. And the cool part about it, and we talked about this, I think, when the coaches poll got released, the cool part about this is Cincinnati's going to get a chance to prove it.
Yeah.
Early on with Indiana and Notre Dame on the road in the first 4 games. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe they are, maybe they're not overrated or underrated or whatever. But guess what? We're going to find out. And that's the beauty of them having the season they had last year, to me, is that they get to start this way and they can prove it. You know, to have the schedule. Thank goodness it's not like a year later where we never really find out.
Yeah, sometimes that's a burden on teams like Cincinnati. You got everybody's attention last year. You're highly ranked now. And now you got these marquee games. They would have loved to come in under the radar and go to Indiana and beat them, and obviously at Notre Dame and beat them.
Or just go, we're good, watch this.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the last time I can remember this scenario was back in 2016. Houston coming off the group of 5 or the New Year's 6 bowl win.
Yeah.
And then right there to start with OU and winning.
Right.
And then the expectations and some injuries also, no doubt about that, kind of derailed that season for the Cougars. But this is Cincinnati's kind of in that same boat with a chance to go ahead and prove it.
Man, how long is Luke Fickell going to hang out in Cincinnati?
He wouldn't think very much longer.
I think the next time a big job comes open, he'd be at the top of the list.
Yeah, heck yeah.
I mean, yeah. He's the guy I'd hire in a heartbeat.
All right, so A&M, 6. It's the first preseason top 10 since 2013 when Texas A&M started 7th. That was the year after Johnny won the Heisman, was coming back. That A&M team started 7th and finished 18th. How long, and this is the Bear, you know, Chris Felica, the Bear on game day.
Yeah.
A bunch of this is coming from him. How many times, or I'm sorry, when's the last time the Texas A&M Aggies started the year in the top 10 and finished the year in the top 10?
Oh, wow. I'm going to guess late. I don't know. It's going to be a lot of years.
1993.
About said late 90s. So
1993 is the last time A&M started and finished the year in the AP top 10.
Where they finished in 98? I was wondering. I mean,
they didn't start. I guarantee you,
they
didn't start.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing about that team. It didn't start
right
there. They've only been ranked. This is kind of surprising. Since 1993, they've only been ranked in the preseason top 10 4 different times.
I think a lot of it is going into with where they're starting now is the Jimbo Fisher factor. It seems like this is 100% his team. Now, what is this, his fourth recruiting, fifth recruiting class? So these are his guys. And I know you hated Mond, but it's a big deal when you lose a starting quarterback. Do you have to break in a new one? We saw it last year over in Norman. Even with that thrown in there, people have a lot of faith on how Jimbo Fisher can get guys on campus on a team. So I think that's a big reason why they – plus their schedule is so dang light.
Yeah, their schedule is pretty weak.
Yeah. Their key games, Colorado, Alabama, LSU. Actually, one key game, Alabama. And that's in College Station, and it's actually kind of early in the year. Never know. October 9th.
Trying to find – Iowa State. This is going to be the highest they've ever started. Preseason. So Iowa State, all right, think about this. They've been ranked 26 weeks since 2017. 2017, Matt Campbell shows up. They've been ranked 26 weeks in that span of what? 4 years. Four of those weeks have been in the top 10.
And by the way, I take it back. I would hire Matt Campbell before Luke Fickell.
There you go. All right. Think about this. So the AP poll 1936 is the inception. How many weeks do you think Iowa State was ranked in the 80 years prior, from 1936 to 2016? I guess that's only that's 80.
I'll go five or lower.
No, it's way more than that.
Okay, I don't know.
Okay, so they were ranked 26 weeks in the last 4 years. They were ranked 40 weeks in the 80 years prior and only once in the top 10. Three of Iowa State's four all-time preseason rankings have come in the last 3 years. So only 1 year prior to Matt Campbell's tenure were they ever ranked in the top 25 preseason. I would guess that was 2002 with Seneca Wallace. I don't know that to be the case, but that would be my guess.
Yeah, I would too. That was late in the season when they came to Norman and Seneca Wallace Heisman hype was
high. Kind of in the middle. It was early November.
I was at the game, and it was a rainy, cold day. Yeah, I remember that. And then they... I know you derailed that hard.
Destroyed him.
Got a feeling it's going to go out that way, too.
Destroyed him.
This was brought up yesterday afternoon about OU. I think Al brought it up, saying, how does OU not get complacent?
Yeah, I heard the point spread talk
and hearing about, all they're hearing off season, like this is their best team under Riley. They have all these guys coming back. Some are pegging them to, like Phil Still, picking them to win the national title. So how do you not get complacent hearing all this great talk about, same could be applied to Iowa State. I got a feeling that could happen to them too. They returned so much. What, like nine on
I think it's defense. 20 and 22 or something like that.
I got it right here. Nine on defense, 10 starters on offense, and they're hearing everything how you guys were the greatest Iowa State team last year. Now you got everybody back. You got a chance to go back to the Big 12 title game, win it, and get into the playoff, da-da-da. Yeah, I can see Iowa State's got to be careful because they can get nipped early, especially in that Iowa game.
That's the whole thing.
It just glares at me that I don't know how that's going to turn out.
It's in Ames, but
that helps.
Here's the deal.
I mean, what are they 0-5 the last five times they met?
The thing is, they're a lot like Cincinnati. We can sit here and talk about what we think. We're going to find out quick with them.
Yeah.
Second week, if they beat Iowa, then watch out. They're liable to be undefeated going to Norman in late November. If they don't, then watch out because those seasons kind of take turns. They didn't get to play that game last year after losing to Louisiana to start the season, which was probably a blessing in disguise for them.
Yeah.
Losing the first game when you weren't supposed to Louisiana, then going having to go to Iowa City and playing that game. OSU, they were 22 in the coaches. They would have been 26 here, the last team not in. Man, it just – I'm not saying that they're – because to me, Iowa State feels kind of like the OSU of last year. All these guys back, all this expectation. OSU failed to meet those expectations.
Oh,
we'll see if Iowa State does. As kind of the – it was OSU last year going into the season was the challenger to Oklahoma. And the throne of five straight Big 12 titles, right?
Yeah.
It was because of having those guys back. And it just didn't happen, right? With Wallace and Hubbard deciding to come back, thinking they're going to be elite from Sanders, it just didn't quite happen. But we've seen in the Mike Gundy era, and especially once he really got it turned around and rolling, there's one common thread with Oklahoma State and kind of the success they have, and it's this to me. The years that you think, oh, they're going to be pretty good, they end up being really good. And the years you think, man, this is a team. This is the team to challenge or win the Big 12, they kind of don't meet those expectations. So, plus, I mean, at some point with the talent Sanders has, either put up or shut up, and I have a feeling I'm leaning more toward the put up for him this year. The defense, by a lot of the metrics, is the best one in the Big 12. They're a fantastic defense. There's no doubt about that. And so if for the first time in I don't know when, you can sit here and say both state schools have competent defenses and maybe even say that one of them will be a defensive-led team. And if the offense can just catch up a little bit, OSU will be really good.
Yeah. And talk about motivation. You know, talk about hearing all the talk. Well, it works the same way. It works the other way, too. When all those guys in that locker room and on that field and during that practice, they're hearing, well, you know, you're just outside our top 25. You're not that good. And, you know, it's Oklahoma. It's Iowa State. It's Texas. Even maybe even TCU before you guys. Mm-hmm. Every time Mike Gundy gets a team like that.
It seems like they end up 10-2.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. We know good and well right here in this state, you can't count Mike Gundy and OSU out, even if they're projected not to be good. They will be good.
Yeah. They'll
always find a way to go somewhere and win where they shouldn't win.
Oh, they beat Iowa State the last 2 years.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't think anybody's beat Iowa State the last 2 years in this league but them.
That's a good point.
You know, it's kind of like it feels like to me the 22 and the coaches is a little bit more indicative of where they should start than outside the top 25 completely. Other than that, I mean, a lot of the same teams, those guys at the bottom, in the Louisianas, the Coastal Carolinas, are getting the love from last year, which is fine, whatever. I mean, they'll either prove it or they won't. Louisiana first game in Austin against Texas. Can they pull off another stunner like they did in Ames, Iowa last year? We'll find out. But I think it's going to be, as much as nobody wants to hear this, with a four-team playoff, I think everyone that wants it to be different and everybody that wants a bunch of new blood in there, I don't think this is your year.
Right.
I don't think this is your year.
You're going to get – it's going to be the usual suspects.
I think it is. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Now, Georgia could change my mind in week one with a win, but it won't surprise me at all if those top four is your playoff. And some good news for OU fans. Of the 14 teams ranked number one and number two in the playoff era, 10 of them got there. 10 of them got to the playoff. It's pretty good guessing. But for a bunch of those years, when you just put Bama 1, Clemson 2, or vice versa, you've been pretty good at guessing half the playoff.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with Ohio State not really seeing, I mean, there's not a real challenger to them in the Big Ten, is there? I mean, everybody else, you've got them at 4, and everybody else is down to 12 with Wisconsin or even lower with Wisconsin. Wisconsin's kind of that team that you keep waiting to break through and never does. Nobody thinks Indiana or Penn State's going to beat Ohio State. Clemson, can North Carolina do something? And then who's going to challenge OU? Will it be Iowa State? Will it be Texas? Will it be OSU? Will it be TCU? I mean, it's just like outside of Bama having to win the SEC title game, or some years not even having to. Outside of that, it's like, okay, those other three have won it 6 in a row or whatever, their own conference. So who is going to knock them off? And this year, even more than some others, it's kind of hard to see it, because at the end of the day, no offense to the Cyclones, but when you put those two helmets beside each other in Norman in November, nobody thinks Iowa State's going to win that game.
Right.
When the chips are really down and it matters, nobody thinks that. Now, I mean, people would trust OSU or Texas way more to win that game. And OSU does not deserve that props. They never win that game when it matters either.
It's true.
You know, but yeah. You feel like there's a better chance that the Cowboys could do it than the Cyclones, right?
Yeah.
Just because of history, just, you know, a lot of that. I mean, So
should an OU fan be more scared of Iowa State Norman or OSU on the road?
Oh man, I think
to wrap up the season.
I think that I don't know. There's hostile environments, places. There's no doubt. That night in Stillwater or that day in Stillwater.
Oh, it'll be a night game. You know it will be.
With what's happening.
Yeah.
With the conference stuff. Watch out.
Yeah.
I don't know if it gets much more hostile than that crowd is going to be waiting on the arrival.
It'll throw more stuff on the field.
Yeah, it'll be wild. Man, we didn't get to the dadgum football again.
We better hurry. The high school. Because season's next week.
Yeah, maybe that's what we'll just do on Monday. Hey,
hurry.
It's game week. Here's your preview. I wanted to hit this, though. Did you see what happened yesterday in the world of college football recruiting?
What's that?
Luther Burden, which is the number 6 player in the 247 composite rankings. He's St. Louis, Missouri. He's a wide receiver. He decommitted from OU in the class of 2022. He becomes the third top 100 type receiver, top 100 player in the country, and they're all receivers. Third one of those guys to decommit from OU in this cycle in 2022. So instead of having, which on the 247 list, it takes all the different rankings and puts them into one. So there's no, you know, if you don't like ESPN's rankings but like Rivals, this puts all these into one. You know, it averages them out, right, and puts the composite into it. He was number 6. Talon Shetron, which was from Edmund Santa Fe, committed OU at one time, now going to OSU, was 77. Jordan Hudson, who decommitted from OU, going to SMU, number 136. What is happening?
That's anybody's guess. Change of heart, kids flip-flop all the time. I wonder if the NIL has anything to do with this. I thought there could be a shift in recruiting when kids see, you know what, I have a better opportunity in Dallas to make a little bit more money than I do in Norman or OKC or St. Louis. I think it is what it is. I mean, it never really worries me as an OU fan personally. I'm like, well, they're gone, so that opens up spot for someone else Lincoln can go get. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not pressing the panic buttons, what I'm saying.
Here's the problem. How many, not bridges did he burn, but how many doors did he close for guys that wanted to go to OU mm-hmm. when he had these three committed?
It's true.
And can you get back in the game?
I wonder how many opportunities or situations like that he's been in, you know, where guys have decommitted and he's been able to go back and go, hey, listen, now we got a spot for you. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
I think the NIL is interesting in this scenario because Jordan Hudson was kind of a Dallas kid and he committed to SMU. Is there that kind of big fish, small pond money there?
I kind of feel like that. I feel like something was like
Luther Burden, East St. Louis. Now, you know, it's kind of up in the air. Will he go to Georgia? Is one of those Alabama or also Mizzou? If it's Mizzou, is it that same situation where local kid stays home and is able to make NIL money.
Yeah, more recognized at home.
Exactly. And now the question is this, though. If these guys, I mean, when you rank this high, you clearly have potential, and that potential is NFL potential.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing you don't probably want to see if you're rooting for these kids is the short-term money affect the long-term generational-type wealth by going to a program that's been rolling through producing wide receivers in the NFL, which then are able to make that big time money in the league, as opposed to a little bit of money right now.
Mm-hmm.
Remains to be seen.
Yeah.
Now, today, here in just a little bit, 2023 number one receiver in the country from Florida, Brandon Ennis, is going to commit, and most people think he's going to commit to OU. And everybody's going to get excited. The running backs that are already committed in the next class, the next class with receivers and quarterback and all this, it looks great. But the problem is, as this rolls along, does it look like this class? Which
right.
Now we're middle
That's
of August worried about,
yeah.
is it falling apart
right.
Or do you hold on to them?
Yeah,
and here's the thing where I'd lean toward a little bit more of keeping it together than falling apart. Is because of the 22 class, what's missing?
Well, they were recruited via Zoom, weren't they?
But what's missing in the class of commitments?
A quarterback.
That's exactly right. And so you don't have that leader of the class from that position because you get Rattler in 2019, you get Caleb Williams in 2021. It's hard to talk somebody, a high-ranked quarterback, into coming in 2022, especially then you look at the next year in 23, Malachi Nelson, number two player in the country, is already committed to OU.
That class wasn't a class that had a quarterback need.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
I see what you're saying.
You can afford to skip
it
a year.
That catalyst of a class to build around. I totally get that.
That's right.
Yeah. And another thing, I mentioned the Zoom thing. You know, was most of the 2022 class recruited via the Zoom and virtual recruiting
then got to
and
go
all that
out.
Stuff? And then they got to go out and start seeing other campuses. And even come to OU and go, you know what? This doesn't feel right. And that's the kid's prerogative. That's his. That's okay. You got to do what feels best. And if that didn't feel best for him, I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that, you know? And so the 23 class, we talked about, well, will it break down? One, I don't go crazy about a kid committing because these scenarios could happen. They can change their mind. They could decommit. You see it every day.
And by the way,
across the country,
some of these kids, I mean, C.D. Lamb decommitted too at one point and came back in the fold and the rest is history.
But what is encouraging about the 23 class and DeMarco Murray, you can see the effects he's having. He recruits better when he's in person. Face-to-face.
That's what he said.
And so this is really the post-COVID recruiting class where they've been on campus, the Champ U barbecue. They're going to have unofficial visits, official visits to games and stuff like that. I feel more comfortable that these guys will honor their commitments.
I like it because they have a quarterback in that class.
Well, sure, that's a big
I think that helps
why.
A ton.
Yeah.
I think it helps a ton.
Decommits happen all the time. Recommitments happen all the time, like you mentioned.
And three guys, though.
Other guys.
It's got to be worrisome. Three guys at the same position. Now you don't have a receiver. Hope everybody doesn't go pro.
I don't think he'll have a problem.
Hope everybody doesn't go pro.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.